here it is, my friends, the last hour of the week. Chris Check sitting in for Cy Kellett. The show is Catholic Answers Live. Cy Kellett and senior apologist at Catholic Answers, Tim Staples, are in Utah speaking to crowds of hundreds of thousands. I think I'm exaggerating, Jimmy. I don't think it's actually hundreds of thousands.
It would be nice, though.
Oh, yeah, sure. If you, my friends, if you have a crowd of hundreds of thousands, or frankly, even hundreds, go to CatholicAnswerSpeakers.com and invite one of our great speakers to come speak to your group. But yes, Cy and Tim are in Utah, so I'm sitting in for Cy. He'll be back here on Monday. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Jimmy, we were supposed to do Bible questions for the first and second hour here today, but we wanted to talk a little bit about what was going on in the Archdiocese of San Francisco and in the and really in the broader, we can say, political world in the United States. And so we made it open forum if people want to have questions about Archbishop Corleone and his denying of Speaker of the House Pelosi communion. We're happy to field those questions. So we're just making this up.
As long as it's a question and not just a complaint.
Right.
Like, why doesn't Bishop X do this?
That's
well,
right.
I don't know the situation for Bishop X. Yes.
We are not here to tell you what your bishop should or should not do. Exactly. But yes, if we can clarify something or please don't hesitate to ask. But, of course, we welcome your Bible questions. So open forum for this final hour on a Friday, 888-318-7884. But, Jimmy, I did have an opportunity to kind of give a quick little mention of your latest booklet here for Catholic Answers in our 20 Answers series. I don't even know. We must be close to 70 of these by now. Or 60 or 70. But anyway, I'm actually kind of...
I think I'm the most common author among them.
I think
that's the case.
I have no difficulty believing that. I also saw this when Carrie Beck put it on my desk, and I said, we haven't done a 20 Answers on the Book of Revelation yet. You would think that would be like one of the very first ones you do, because it's one that people always have questions about, and you answer them.
Yeah, and looking forward, I just it's not out yet, but a few weeks ago I turned in 20 answers on the four Gospels, and I've got a commission for the next cycle of 20 answers the Book of Acts, and I've proposed doing 20 answers St. Paul and 20 answers Catholic epistles, and that would give us 20 answers across the entire New Testament.
Oh, wonderful. Glory. So my friends, these 20 answers booklets are, I mean, they're very handsome. They have a nice square spine. They're easy to throw in your back pocket.
They're not scrolls, is what you're saying.
No, that's true. They are vastly more. I'm going to just say this. No offense intended to my friends in the ancient world, but considerably more practical than a scroll.
Well, so there's kind of a debate about the relative benefits of scrolls versus the modern form of a book, which is known as a codex. And personally, I'm on team codex.
Okay.
I really like codices, but there were people in the ancient world who would, and since then, who would argue that actually the difference is not in utility is not as great as you might think. At least for books of a certain length. At a certain point, they get so long, codex is the only way to go. But you know who it was that popularized codices?
No.
Christians.
Oh.
Previously, almost all literature was in the form of scrolls, and you only used codices for like little notepads. But Christians, and people would never dream of putting their sacred books in a codex. But Christians did sometime in the first century. There was a Christian book that got put into the form of a codex and published. There's a debate about what it may have been. It may have been the Gospel of Mark or one of the other Gospels. It may have been a collection of Paul's letters, but there was some early Christian book put in the form of a codex that then caused it Christians to regard it as, oh, we can use this for sacred literature. And from there, it took off, and Christians were the ones who popularized codices.
So this sounds to me like an argument in favor
Mm-hmm. I love codices.
Well, yeah. Yes, but the ease of distribution, or the vast distribution that follows, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, vast distribution really requires the printing press.
Sure.
Scrolls and codices aren't too much different in terms of difficulty to manufacture. But one thing it does allow you to do is produce much longer works, which can store more information. Because if you've got, I mean, the Bible is like a 1,500-page book. And you can have a Bible and easily leaf through it to the passage you want if it's bound on a square spine. But if those pages were sewed edge to edge in a big, gigantic scroll, think of how long it would take to scroll to the passage you want. I mean, you might be in Genesis and you want to look up something in Revelation. You're going to be winding that thing for an hour or more.
Yeah.
And so codices allowed books to become bigger and contain more information with easy access to where that information is.
So let me ask you, when do scrolls fade? From the scene.
They start fading, and it's piecemeal, of course, but they start fading like between the 2nd and 5th centuries.
Oh, that early. Huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting.
They're still used on some occasions, but it's much rarer now.
So all those things, for example, like Anglo-Saxon Chronicle or something like that, those would be codices.
As far as I'm aware, yes.
Yeah, interesting. All right. Well, very good. So 20 answers. They're a great resource, easier to carry around than a scroll. I'm gonna give that to the marketing team here at Catholic Answers.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah,
they'll probably sell a bunch of them. 888-318-7884, open forum with Jimmy Akin, Chris Check sitting in for Cy Kellett. Steve in Lawrenceburg, Indiana, listening on Alexa. But really, Alexa connected to what, Steve? Welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Thank you. I'm geeking out right now. So here's my question. I have some friends that are getting married, mm-hmm. Two pretty good friends. I am a practicing Catholic. They are not. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They have asked me, obviously I can go to their wedding, but yeah, they have asked me if I would get some sort of ordainment and be the presider of their wedding. So my question is, would I be would the church have an issue with this?
So I need to ask you a few diagnostic questions, but in principle, this is possible. In fact, I've done this myself. My sister and her now husband asked me to perform their ceremony, and neither of them had ever been Catholic. So neither of them was bound by the form of marriage, to observe the Catholic form of marriage. They could have any kind of wedding they wanted, and it wouldn't make it invalid. They also neither had been married to anybody before, so neither one of them was presumptively bound to another spouse. So they were both free to marry each other. And canon law does not prohibit Catholic lay people from performing marriages. That's something I specifically checked on. So in California, you know, you don't need ordination to perform a marriage. In California, basically anybody can perform a marriage. And so all you need to do here is go to the state and be commissioned as a deputy registrar of marriages. And here in California, the way they do that is they give you like a license. You fill out a form, they give you a license to perform a single wedding, and then you go and perform that wedding and fill out the paperwork and send it in. So since there were no barriers, My sister and her fiancé were free to marry each other. They were not required to have a Catholic wedding since neither was Catholic or had ever been Catholic. And since I was not prohibited by canon law for doing it, I went to the state of California. I was commissioned as a deputy registrar of marriages, and I did the ceremony for them. And I checked with a canon lawyer beforehand to make sure all that was kosher, and it was. So, diagnostic questions for your situation, Steve. Has either one of these friends of yours ever been Catholic?
Yes.
Okay.
The man was he is a non-practicing Catholic, I guess is what I should describe him as.
Well, the way the law is written today, if you have ever been Catholic, you are obliged to either observe the Catholic form of marriage or get a dispensation from observing the Catholic form of marriage. So in order for your friend, in order for you to be able to marry your friends, he would need to get a dispensation from the Catholic form of marriage to allow that to happen. Otherwise, the marriage would not be valid. And if a marriage is not going to be valid, then you would not be morally able to participate in it. Second okay. diagnostic question, has either one of these friends been married to someone else before?
Yes, both, I believe.
And are those former spouses still alive?
One.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, whoever has the deceased former spouse, that person is now free to contract a new marriage. But the one who has a living former spouse is presumably still married to that spouse, objectively speaking. And so that person would need to obtain an annulment in order to establish their freedom to marry the other friend. So it sounds like there are some hurdles to you being able to perform this service. It's not impossible if the needed annulment and the needed dispensation from Catholic form were obtained, but if those were not obtained, then the marriage would not be objectively valid and you would not be able to participate.
Is that good and clear? Does that help, Steve?
Yes, it sure is clear. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Jimmy, it's funny, you and I were having a conversation about this around lunchtime today on some of these
questions.
You've got a piece forthcoming on Catholic.com.
Yeah, I have a piece coming up next week on is it possible to cease becoming a Catholic? And then I'm going to write a second follow-up piece, not sure when it'll appear, but presumably within a week or two, on how the church's law regarding marriage has changed in this regard.
888-318-7884. Let's get one more question before the break. Peter in Kansas, listening on 1090 AM. Welcome to Catholic Answers Live. Peter in Kansas. We're having funny phones today. Peter in Kansas.
Why don't we take the break?
Let's do that. My friends, all kinds of things for sale at shop.catholic.com this weekend for the customer appreciation sale. Hundreds of resources, just $2, $4, $6, and $8. Books, DVDs, digital videos, ebooks, MP3s, CDs. Huge selection to shop from, all less than $8. This sale ends Monday night, the 23rd, Pacific time, maybe Hawaii time, but I think Pacific time. $2, $4, $6, $8, shop.catholic.com.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at catholic.com.
Underwriting support provided by Homeschool Connections. Homeschool Connections hosts the Catholic Homeschool Conference. The 2022 Catholic Homeschool Conference is June 10th through 11th, and the website is CatholicHomeschoolConference.com. That's CatholicHomeschoolConference.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Underwriting by Great Catholic Music.
Great Catholic Music, your one-of-a-kind streaming platform for traditional Catholic hymns and contemporary favorites 24 hours a day. Music that soothes the soul, that's safe for the whole family to listen to. What a relief. Great Catholic Music. Download the free mobile app or listen on any Alexa-enabled device or write from your PC or tablet at greatcatholicmusic.com. Great Catholic Music, melodies for the soul.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
I'm continually amazed and humbled at the way God can work through me to help so many people. Although I have no idea what the caller's questions will be that day, I trust that the Holy Spirit can use my education and experience to guide, challenge, or comfort those who call.
Mast Appeal with Colleen Kelly Mast, Saturday morning, 9 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
We'll be right back.
Catholic Answers Live, 888-318-7884. Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers, sitting in for Cy Kellett, who will be back in this chair on Monday. So just hang in there for a few more days, my friends. We're going to go right back to your questions with Jimmy Akin. Before we do, joining me in studio, Events Queen, Erica Olson.
Hello, everyone.
Is that your title here, Events Queen?
Sure.
Yeah. Event.
If that is, though, you need to buy me a crown.
Like a tiara?
Yeah.
Director of events. Director yes. of events. We have a big event coming up that I don't think we've announced yet.
We have not announced it yet. I think there's trickles of it out there. People are talking, like the rumor has spread a little bit.
It's hard to keep this one a secret.
Yeah, but we haven't, like, this is the first official announcement of this event that's coming up.
And it's a big one. We've never done
we've
this.
We've never done
never.
This
before. Is brand new in the whole history of Catholic Answers. Never done it.
Yes.
Which I find kind of something because, well, California is our home state.
It is.
So what is
it?
Very
exciting.
What are we doing?
So for the very first time, we are going on a California missions pilgrimage from San Diego up to San Francisco. And we're hitting as many missions as we can along the way.
There are 22 of them.
Yes.
Or 21.
Yes. I don't know if we're hitting all of them.
No, it's
but we are hitting a lot. I mean, I have a list here of just a few of the big ones we're going to hit. But I think we're hitting about three a day.
San Luis Rey, San Diego, of course, the first one, the birthplace of California,
yes.
San Juan Capistrano, San Fernando, Santa Barbara, Carlos Borromeo, of course, who's buried there? Junipero Serra.
Yes,
right.
Jay Serra.
Yeah, so in the footsteps of Junipero Serra. So because it's in the footsteps of Junipero Serra, we're going to be walking. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Without
I hope you have your walking stick and your shoes. Or
nope.
No shoes.
Yeah. No, we actually have a lovely motor coach.
Yes, we're going to have hopefully two buses full.
But no more than
two. But no more than that. So I have it right here in big red letters. The first 100 people to register get to come. So seating is very limited for this. So if you want to come, you have to go look at the info and register as soon as you can.
When is it?
It is from October 30th, my due date, by the way.
so you will not be joining
be going.
Us.
No, I'm just planning it for all of you wonderful people. From October 30th to November 6th.
So we'll be celebrating All Saints Day.
Among yes. Things,
yeah.
Yes.
Cool.
And then there's an optional add-on, which you can look at on the website, which is also very exciting. That takes it up to, I think, November 9th.
Right. The add-on includes a little trip into some wine country in Napa. And also
Fort
Ross.
Ross, yes.
Fort Ross. So if you really want to know the story of the Spanish expedition up into Alta California, you have to understand the Russian involvement. And that's why we're going to go to Fort Ross.
Yes.
I'm really excited about this trip, Erica, not only because California is our home state. Junipero Serra has been under a lot of fire lately mm-hmm. for all the alleged wicked things that he did. We're going to set the record straight on Junipero Serra. But also I'm excited about this because we're going, in addition to the missions, we're going to get a lot of really wonderful California flavor. So we're going to see
yes.
some beautiful sites like Big Sur,
yes.
for example.
Solvang.
Right.
If you've never been to Solvang, it's the cutest little Dutch town you've ever seen.
And there are four very special people. Well, Cy Kellett.
Yes, are going along, and
yeah.
Cy Kellett's going along to give some historical talks.
Right, and then there are four very special people joining us also. Mm-hmm. And one of them is Dana Gioia, who is the poet laureate of California.
California, yep.
A very devout Catholic man, a magnificent poet, deeply in love with his state. And so we're going to hear some of his Catholic and California poems one evening. Robert Sankiewicz, who's been on Catholic Answers Focus, is in my mind the leading English-speaking authority on Junipero Serra. A very dear friend of mine named Roger McGrath, who if you've ever watched History Channel, he's always on there talking on the Old West programs. He's going to talk about gold and the transition from...
Yeah, that sounds so exciting.
The transition from Mexican to Anglo, if you will,
mm-hmm.
California. And then the man who's in the news today,
yes.
Archbishop Salvatore Corleone, is going to be saying Mass for us
yes,
at Mission San Francisco.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's very... I'm really excited for that. I'm really bummed that I'm missing this, but For a very good reason.
This is going to be the best California mission pilgrimage ever.
Yes. So we're going, like I said, to about 2 or 3 missions a day. You're going to get to see amazing California sites on top of the mission.
Oh, the brand new St. Michael's Abbey.
Yes. Oh, yes. We're going to go to St. Michael's Abbey for the first time. You're going to get to see. They just finished
the big mosaics up.
Yep. It's absolutely gorgeous there. So you're going to get to visit the Norbertines.
Right.
We are limiting it to
2 buses. So this
will sell out. Only 100 people get to come. So make sure that you go check it out. If you're really, really interested, check it out as soon as you can.
How do I find out about it?
So you're going to want to visit CatholicAnswersPilgrimage.com. And it'll take you to the site with all the information. It's pretty much all inclusive. You get 2 meals a day. All the hotels are covered in the cost. The bus is obviously covered. So there's a lot of things that are already wrapped up in the cost. So I think all you have to pay for is getting to San Diego to start the trip.
California Missions with Chris Check, Cy Kellett, and a host or a cast of really
special guests.
First-rate minds, CatholicAnswersPilgrimage.com, CatholicAnswersPilgrimage.com.
Yep.
Thank you,
Hope
Erica.
Hope to see you on it.
How's the baby?
Doing good. We
Glory
had an appointment to today. She's doing great.
good. 888-318-7884. Peter in Kansas, you're ready. Welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Okay. Are you there?
We are. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's hear your question, Peter.
Well, I was praying and my cell phone didn't run out of battery.
Okay.
But I listened to 1090 all the time, or 92, or what, and that for years I've been listening to it.
Oh, thank you. What's your question for Jimmy today?
Okay, it's kind of a statement and a question. I'm going to try to put it the best way I can. I listen during the day, and I can't think of I'm 86 years old, and I can't think of the guy's name that does the day show, but answers questions. And people always calling in and saying one thing they don't like about the Catholic Church is the worship to Mary. And they answer the question and they never bring up what the angel Gabriel said to Mary when he, on the Annunciation, they don't talk about that. And that is the Hail Mary, mostly. And then what she said to his Elizabeth. And the last part of it is, I'm losing my thought.
That's okay. Are you asking why? Are you asking?
The Magnificat, sure. All right. What do you think, Jimmy?
Well, if I understand Peter's question correctly, he's asking why don't Catholics or why don't the people on this program bring up the Magnificat as a way of illustrating reverence for Mary or the importance of Mary or something like that. Anytime someone asks a question that can be put in the form, why doesn't X happen more? You know, whether it's why don't the bishops do this more? Why doesn't the Pope do this more? Why don't priests do this more? Why don't ordinary Catholics do this more? The answer is sociological. You'd have to ask them. You'd have to do a survey if it's a group and ask why they don't do something more. I can't really speak for them. And if the question is about this person doing a morning show, you'd have to ask that person. But what I can say is in discussing Mary and the veneration of Mary, I bring up the Magnificat a lot. So do other apologists at Catholic Answers, because it says Mary says right there, behold, all generations will call me blessed. And that's what venerating Mary is. It's calling her blessed and recognizing the blessed state that that God bequeathed on her. And so it's directly relevant to the question of is Mary to be venerated or not? Should we be calling her blessed? Should we be acknowledging all the things God did for her by his grace? And so I bring it up a lot, and other apologists I know bring it up a lot. If it's not being brought up by a particular person, you'd have to ask them why they don't do it more.
Peter, if you give your mailing address to Edgar, we're going to send you a copy of our colleague Tim Staples' book, Behold Your Mother, that goes into these questions of the angelic salutation and the Magnificat, and you'll have and then you'll be able to have all of that there for you. 888-318-7884. Adam, let's see if we in the Czech Republic, my goodness, on Catholic.com. Let's see if we can get your question started here.
Yes, hello, Chris. Hello, Jimmy. Thank you for taking my call. Okay, my question has to do with Mark 9:40 and Matthew 12:30. Mark says that who is not against us is for us. Matthew says who is not with me is against me.
Adam,
how do we reconcile?
Right. Adam, there's the break. We're just going to take the hard break. You stay on the line there, and we're going to do the question again on the other side of the break, okay?
Sure.
All right. 888-318-7884, Catholic Answers Live, right back after this. Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you. Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Hi, this is Janet Benkovic-Williams. There's nothing like Women of Grace to explain the truth of our faith Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern here on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live. Chris Check sitting in for Cy Kellett, who is speaking in Utah with Tim Staples. Jimmy Akin and I are here in San Diego. Jimmy's answering your questions, 888-318-7884. And we have a call all the way from the land of my ancestry, the Czech Republic.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Cool.
Adam, are you in, are you in Prague, Adam?
No, I'm in Brno.
Oh, okay. Very good.
Oh,
Why don't you ask your question again, because we kind of cut you off there with the hard break.
Yeah, sure. So Mark 9:40 says, who is not against us is for us. Matthew 12:30 says, who is not with me is against me. So are these two verses in contrast or contradiction with each other? Is there a neutral position that falls into either the for us or the against us group? And does invincible ignorance have anything to do with this? That's my question.
Yeah, great.
Okay. So one of the things that you find in Scripture is various statements that are paradoxes, where they you have two statements that on the surface seem to contradict each other. And what happens in those circumstances is really both statements express an aspect of a greater, more complex truth. My favorite example of this is in the book of Proverbs, where if you're reading along in Proverbs, you will encounter one proverb that says, "Answer not a fool according to his folly." And the very next verse, so the very next proverb says, "Answer a fool according to his folly." And those are, by deliberately putting those two contradictory pieces of advice together, what the proverbist is doing is inviting us to contemplate when it is appropriate to do one and when is it appropriate to do the other. Sometimes, if you answer a fool according to his folly, you can kind of put him in his place and he'll learn a lesson. Other times, if you answer a fool according to his folly, you'll only make yourself look foolish. And that's what the proverbist is saying. He's noting both of these things can happen, and therefore he's inviting us to discern carefully which principle we should apply in what situation, because there's not a universal truth here. Instead, both of these reflect aspects of a greater truth. And we frequently find the same thing in Jesus's teachings as well. If you look in Matthew 5-7, the Sermon on the Mount, you will find Jesus saying things like, "Do your righteous deeds in secret rather than before the eyes of men." But then you'll also, in Matthew 5, find Jesus saying, "Let your good deeds shine before men so they can glorify your Father in heaven." And those look like contradictories, but if you carefully study them, no, they're just two aspects of a larger truth. If people will glorify God, then let them know about your good deeds. Do your good deeds publicly. But if you are tempted to seek glory only for yourself, then cut out that temptation and do them in secret. So in the case of these two verses, whoever's not with me is against me, and whoever's not against me is with me, they're doing something similar. They're expressing a complex truth, different aspects of it, that apply in different situations. If you look in the situation in Mark 9, the disciples have encountered a guy who's not one of the 12, but he's been driving out demons in Jesus's name. Well, driving out demons is a good thing. Driving out demons in Jesus's name is a good thing. And so this guy is fundamentally on Jesus's side. He's not against him. And so it's appropriate for Jesus to make that point to the disciples. On the other hand, what do we have going on in Matthew 12? Well, there Jesus has been accused by his critics of being in league with the devil. And so Jesus there says, you need to be with me in some sense, or you're just against me. There is, he is a divisive figure, and he is expressing a truth there. The people he's talking about there definitely are not with him. They are accusing him of being in league with the devil. And so whereas the guy in Mark 9 was open to Jesus, he's open to Jesus and his message, and he's trying to do good in Jesus's name. So in order to, if you want to, you know, really think about these in a kind of detailed way, notice that both statements talking about who's with me, that can mean different things. So with me can mean something like a member of the 12, and the guy in Mark 9 is not a member of the 12. But it can mean other things, like spiritually approve of me, which his critics in Matthew 12 don't do, but the guy in Mark 9 did do. And so there's ambiguity in the language, and to figure out what he's saying in a particular context, we need to look at the context and see what's going on, and that will inform our understanding of what he's saying. But ultimately, there's no contradiction here. Jesus is reflecting different aspects of a more complex truth that apply in two very different situations.
How's that, Adam?
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Adam, thanks for calling, and please call the show anytime and spread the word about Catholic Answers throughout the Czech Republic for us, okay?
Will do. I will.
Very good. Very good. 888-318-7884. Jimmy, when you were answering that question, I was thinking of my experience as a parent and sometimes saying to one of our boys, of course, they're all grown now, but something like, don't think about yourself all the time. And then on other occasions, saying, you know, just worry about yourself. And, mm-hmm. you know, and those things could appear to be. I think if I recall correctly, one of them said, well, which is it? Of course, they were just being.
Well, it's both. It's situational.
Right.
And
right.
this is frequently the case with practical advice. Practical advice doesn't fit every circumstance.
Right, right. 888-318-7884. Tim in Wyoming watching on Facebook. Tim, welcome to Catholic Answers Live. What's your question for Jimmy?
Hi, how's it going? I have been wearing the St. Michael scapular for several years. I was enrolled in it at a VA hospital. Mm-hmm. And I also wear it with the St. Benedict medal and Miraculous medal. And mm-hmm. I have a friend who's a non-Catholic, and he said that it's like he compared it to a talisman. And a priest mm-hmm. told me that it's not a talisman, mm-hmm. but I feel better when I wear it, you know, like spiritually, I feel there's some kind of connection there.
Good.
But uh-huh. So how is it the same and how is it different?
Okay.
Excellent.
Well, talismans are something that occur in a lot of different cultures. And as a result, talismans don't have a single understanding. They can be understood in different ways. A talisman, there are a whole bunch of different kinds. Now, when we think of talismans, it's typically a small object. It may be a gemstone or a metal or something, or a locket, and it's often something we wear. But there are other kinds of talismans. For example, incantation bowls are a kind of talisman, and an incantation bowl is a bowl, like you would expect, and it's got an incantation written around the rim in a kind of spiral. And so that's another kind of talisman. So there are a bunch of different kinds of talismans. And they're not all understood the same way. In the case of some talismans, they are understood to have a kind of power in them. Like in Polynesia, for example, there is a belief that there is this kind of mystical, magical form of energy in the world called mana. And mana is held to reside in various objects that you can then use for magical purposes. And I suspect when the priest told you that your scapular and your medals are not talismans, that's the kind of understanding he had in mind, that there's nothing magical about these objects. They don't have any inherent power in them. What they are instead is a way of symbolizing our devotion to God and to the saints like St. Michael and asking for their prayers in a kind of visual sense. It's not a spoken prayer, but if you put a St. Michael medallion around your neck, it's a kind of acted out prayer where you're asking St. Michael to protect you. But there's no magical energy in these things. There's no mana in them. And so they're not talismans in that sense. And he's right in that way. On the other hand, if you think of a talisman more broadly as just an object you wear that, you know, you're asking for some kind of protection, well, you are asking St. Michael to protect you. And so, yeah, you could consider it a talisman in that sense, but that's not really what most people mean. What most people mean is the magical understanding of these things. And the church does not teach that these objects have any kind of inherent power or energy in them. Instead, they're simply ways of acting out our prayer and our devotion to God and the saints. And so it's really a form of prayer. It's not a form of magic.
Is that clear that up for you, Tim?
Oh, yeah, totally. That was great. Thank you.
Good, 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 good. Happy to help. Call back anytime. A couple of lines are open, my friends. 888-318-7884. Chris Check sitting in Versailles, Cali. Catholic Answers Live. Let's go to Jacob in San Antonio on 89,
89.7 FM.
Thank you. I got to get different glasses for this show, Jimmy. What's your question, Jacob, for Jimmy Akin?
Hey, Chris. Hey, Jimmy. I wanted to hear your thoughts on a medieval grimoire, or a translation of which I was gifted recently, called The Sworn Book of Honorius. From what I understand, just kind of browsing through it, it's like Christian-themed magic. But I wasn't sure how to approach it. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts.
Well, okay, so it's the Sworn Book of Honorius, also sometimes translated as the Oath-Bound Book of Honorius, is a grimoire, and a grimoire is a kind of book that, like, contained magical texts, like what you would do in order to perform a particular spell or a particular kind of magic. And my memory is that the Sworn Book of Honorius is a form of Solomonic magic, which is a kind of magic attributed to King Solomon that involves the manipulation of angels and demons. So in the first place, in a lot of these medieval and Renaissance-era magical texts, they're attributed to someone who didn't really write them. The authors of these things tended to want to make their work seem more authoritative and more mystical by attributing them to ancient origins. But like attributing your form of magic to King Solomon, you know, because he had this reputation, this ancient holy figure who is very wise. And so any magic he did must be really awesome magic. But really, both of these works, both the Key of Solomon, which is a book of Solomonic magic, and the Sworn Book of Honorius, they really date from the Middle Ages, from the late Middle Ages and the early Renaissance. The Sworn Book of Honorius, I think, is like maybe referred to in the 13th century. But it definitely is not as ancient as it claims to be. So that's one thing to be aware of. Another thing to be aware of is magic doesn't work. So magic is a form of superstition. And so there can be a historical interest in learning about what people used to believe about magic and what different groups of people used to believe about it. But it doesn't work, and it's a form of superstition, so don't do it. And if you'd like more on that, I'd suggest you check out, I believe it's episode 79 of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, on religion, magic, psychic phenomena, and science, where I go through those four different categories, as well as superstition, and talk about what they mean and how they relate to each other.
Jacob, we got to take a quick break. Thanks for your call. My friends, I hope you will think of joining us on our California Missions Catholic Answers Pilgrimage. Visit CatholicAnswersPilgrimage.com for all the details. Right back after this.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Wherever you are in the world, you can access the EWTN Global Catholic Network. It's everywhere. You can get EWTN's great Catholic programming on your car radio, at home on your TV, computer, or smart speaker. With EWTN's app, you can take EWTN everywhere, on your phone or mobile device. If you want your news in print, turn to EWTN's paper of record, the National Catholic Register. EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Catholic Answers Live, just about 10 minutes to go here, 888-318-7884. Steve in Ohio, listening on Stations of the Cross. Steve, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hey, good afternoon. Thank you.
Sure.
I guess I'm a cradle Catholic, and my first question is kind of related to the second, being married to a Baptist. I actually have to read my Bible to keep up with her. On John 17, when I was reading that, I know even at the beginning it says when Jesus had finished saying all these things, it sounded like he was at the Last Supper, but I was wondering if that's what he was saying in the garden during the Passion.
Okay. So a number of years ago, I did a study, an extensive study. I've never published it, but I did a study of space and time in the Gospels and Acts, where I went through the Gospels and Acts, and I noted every shift in time and every shift in space. So when there's a time jump or when they move from one location to another, I logged all of that information, and then I studied how it all fits together. And when I encountered the farewell discourse in John, which runs from John chapter 13 through John chapter 17, I discovered something very interesting. When you get to the very last verse of John 14, it's John 14, 41, Jesus has been talking for a while, and then he says, "Get up, let's go." And then he keeps talking. And he talks all the way through chapter 15 and all the way through chapter 16 and all the way through chapter 17. And then it says, they crossed the Kidron Valley where they went to this garden. So John 17, the so-called high priestly prayer of Jesus, where he prays for the unity of believers, that's set in John before they get to the Garden of Gethsemane. But it's not entirely clear where it happens. When I did all this logging, I divided, the text into these segments based on the space and time cues. And I would have to say between John 15 and John 17 for each little segment, no motion indicated unless this is while they're walking, because it looks like at the end of John 14, Jesus says, "Let's get up and walk." And then they either don't yet go and he just keeps talking and they go at the end of chapter 17, or it looks like all of the material between 15 and 17 is happening while they're on their way to the garden or something. So this is a confusing spot. It is not as clear as elsewhere in the Gospels and Acts exactly where the high priestly prayer of John 17 takes place. And so it is an ambiguous text, but at least the way John presents it, they're not in the garden yet. That happens at the beginning of John 18.
What do you think, Steve?
Okay. No, that was great. And then I guess the second question was just, I'm trying to delve more into the early church. Because, again, we had a discussion of when did the Catholic Church start. I listened to Dr. Andrews a lot. Just to have something to say when we say the early church was the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm. Well, so if you're looking for a resource recommendation, I would recommend my book, The Fathers Know Best. It's one of our best-selling books historically, and I go through almost 50 different subjects and show you what the church fathers taught on each of those subjects in chronological order and how it's a manifestation of the same faith we have today as Catholics. So that would give you I also have introductions to who the fathers were and what was going on in their time. But if you're talking with your friend about a particular issue, like, well, what did the early church believe about the Eucharist, or what did the early church believe about baptism, or what did the early church think about the Pope, this would be an excellent resource for you to have, because it looks at those specific topics, like I said, almost 50 of them, and it puts the information in chronological order for you under each topic, so you can see what the fathers were saying about the Eucharist at the end of the first century, and then into the second century, and the third, and the fourth, and so on. And it's helped a lot of people, so I'd suggest that as a resource.
Steve, I'll add to Jimmy's excellent recommendation. Our colleague Joe Heschmeyer just came out with a book of that exact title, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, and that you can also get at shop.catholic.com. So those two complement each other quite well. 888-318-7884. Andrew in Canada watching on YouTube. Andrew, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, Chris, Jimmy. Hello, and thank you.
Sure.
My question is about plenary indulgences. If one were to receive a plenary indulgence, does that in effect essentially remove and cancel all of the corresponding punishment? So, and then, if someone were to die at that moment, they would then immediately go straight to heaven? Or is it only a partial or a portion? Or I just wanted to make sure. Is it a blank slate is my question, if you get plenary indulgence.
So,
is it a blank slate?
So in terms of indulgences, they're divided into two classes, which are known as partial indulgences and plenary indulgences. Plenary means full. So, like, for example, if you have an organization that's having a plenary session, that means all of the members are there. The opposite of a full meeting would be a partial meeting. And that's the distinction we have here with indulgences. Some of them are partial, which means they remove part, but not necessarily all of the temporal consequences that can remain after a sin has been forgiven. But others are plenary. They fully remove the consequences, or they remove all of the temporal consequences that can remain after a sin has been forgiven. So by definition, a plenary indulgence, if you really obtain one, would remove all temporal consequences or punishments that remain, and they therefore would not impede you from going immediately to heaven. They wouldn't need to be cleaned up in purgatory because they're already gone. The trick, as I said, is obtaining a plenary indulgence, because one of the conditions for doing so is being free from all attachment to sin, and that's a little tricky to achieve. But even if you try for a plenary indulgence and you don't free yourself of all attachment to sin, you'll still get a partial indulgence that corresponds to what you were able to achieve.
Does that clarify things, Andrew?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much. I appreciate your
help
on that.
Call any time. Jimmy, we could try to get one more question in. Let's try Tom in Lincoln, Nebraska on Spirit Catholic Radio. The great folks at Spirit Catholic Radio. Tom, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. When there was a lot of scuttlebutt about, you know, excommunication with politicians and these things, a friend of mine who is a priest said, you know, all they really need to do, a bishop could just make a statement that says, this is what the president is saying, and this is what the Catholic Church is, and that's just not Catholicism. And it seems like almost charitable. I mean, it seems charitable and clear and not complicated as far as, you know, excommunication or communion. I mean, I'm okay with those other things, but it just seems like a public statement would go a long way. Is that common knowledge, or have people not really considered that?
So if I understand your question correctly, it's why don't the bishops do this? And anytime someone asks a question that can be put in the form, why doesn't X happen more? It's a sociological answer, and you need to ask the people why they haven't done something. But in this case, I'm pleased to be able to inform you that the bishops actually do this kind of thing all the time. They have a pro-life committee that makes statements. They also publish their doctrinal office also publishes statements articulating Catholic doctrine. They also have voting guides that discuss Catholic doctrine as connected to the political realm. And so they actually produce a lot of statements like this. Unfortunately, Catholic Church opposes abortion is kind of a dog bites man story. And so it's not exciting for the press to cover this. And so a lot of people end up not hearing about the efforts that the U.S. bishops have actually been making in this regard, because the press isn't interested in covering it. They already know the Catholic Church opposes abortion. And just like they already know, the Catholic Church believes that Jesus is the Messiah. So if the bishops come out with a document that says Jesus is the Messiah, the press is going to yawn and not cover that. Same way, Catholic Church comes out with a document just stating Catholic teaching on abortion, press isn't going to find that exciting, and they're likely not to cover it very much. And so a lot of the good work that the bishops have done in this area has been underreported in the press, and people don't realize it's been happening.
And Tom, as you probably know, the bishops themselves within just the last few months published a document on the very question of Eucharistic coherence. I hope that helps. Jimmy, I think we're probably not going to be able to take another question. But you do
probably
have,
not.
You do have time to set up the next episode of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World.
Oh, okay. Well, today we released an episode on UFO, alleged UFO crash parts. and scientific studies that have been done on them. Next week, we're talking about prayer and whether you can pray for things in the past and what various Catholic saints and popes have said about that.
Oh, I'm looking forward to those. All right, my friend Cy Kellett will be back in this chair on Monday. Remember to take advantage of that early bird pricing for the Catholic Answers Conference this September. On the Eucharist, I am with you always. Save $50 by entering the code EARLY at CatholicAnswersConference.com. Have a blessed weekend. Thank you very much, Jimmy.
Thank you, Chris.